Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel intermedio B2. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Advertisement 1.
Support for this podcast comes from the Neubauer Family Foundation, supporting WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation.
Advertisement 2.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Aspiration. Now you can help combat climate change with Aspiration Zero, the credit card that rewards you for going carbon neutral. Plant a tree every time you swipe and earn 1% cash back every month that you reach carbon zero. Aspiration Zero. One card, zero carbon footprint. Visit aspiration.com/credit to learn more.
Advertisement 3.
Many of us are rethinking how we spend our time.
Work has its place in our lives, but it's not our whole reason for living.
I think play is fundamental.
We just need to redefine what we call rest.
A special 3-part series, Work, Play, Rest, on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Advertisement 4.
The news is about more than what just happened. You need to know why it happened, who made it happen, how it's felt in the communities you care about. NPR's daily news podcast, Consider This, gives you all of that, with context, backstory, and analysis on a single topic every weekday. It's not just information, it's what the news means. Consider This from NPR.
Advertisement 5.
If you're looking for your next binge watch or you want the latest on all the big movies and albums, NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour has you covered. Every weekday, we are your guide to all things entertainment. Listen to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Advertisement 6.
Questlove directed last year's documentary, Summer of Soul. But even he had a hard time believing it ever happened.
come on, man. You trying to tell me that 300,000 people gathered in one place and I can't find one photo on the internet? That's crazy.
The revolution of the Harlem Cultural Festival. Listen now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Advertisement 7.
What happens when you're pushed to the limit? And what does it take to go further? I'm Jay Williams, and those questions define my journey to the NBA and beyond. But overcoming limits is something we all have to do. So come with me as I explore how, with some of the biggest names in sports, business, and culture. Listen to my new show, The Limits, from NPR.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Advertisement 1.
Support for this podcast comes from the Neubauer Family Foundation, supporting WHYY's Fresh Air and its commitment to sharing ideas and encouraging meaningful conversation.
Advertisement 2.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Aspiration. Now you can help combat climate change with Aspiration Zero, the credit card that rewards you for going carbon neutral. Plant a tree every time you swipe and earn 1% cash back every month that you reach carbon zero. Aspiration Zero. One card, zero carbon footprint. Visit aspiration.com/credit to learn more.
Advertisement 3.
Many of us are rethinking how we spend our time.
Work has its place in our lives, but it's not our whole reason for living.
I think play is fundamental.
We just need to redefine what we call rest.
A special three-part series, Work, Play, Rest, on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Advertisement 4.
The news is about more than what just happened. You need to know why it happened, who made it happen, how it's felt in the communities you care about. NPR's daily news podcast, Consider This, gives you all of that with context, backstory, and analysis on a single topic every weekday. It's not just information. It's what the news means. Consider This from NPR.
Advertisement 5.
If you're looking for your next binge watch or you want the latest on all the big movies and albums, NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour has you covered. Every weekday, we are your guide to all things entertainment. Listen to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Advertisement 6.
Questlove directed last year's documentary, Summer of Soul. But even he had a hard time believing it ever happened.
Come on, man. You trying to tell me that 300,000 people gathered in one place and I can't find one photo on the internet? That's crazy.
The revolution of the Harlem Cultural Festival. Listen now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Advertisement 7.
What happens when you're pushed to the limit? And what does it take to go further? I'm Jay Williams, and those questions define my journey to the NBA and beyond. But overcoming limits is something we all have to do. So come with me as I explore how, with some of the biggest names in sports, business, and culture. Listen to my new show, The Limits, from NPR.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract 1.
Before COVID, there was climate change, the greatest challenge for humanity's future. Will this be the year when we finally start to turn round the juggernaut of growing carbon dioxide emissions? Will we see more of the extreme weather events which appeared around the world in 2021, harbingers of the dangers to come? It's these themes of hope and fear which we'll be keeping in mind during this special New Year's Day edition. We'll hear about the efforts people are making to rebuild their lives after a year in which they've suffered. We start with climate change and a place that saw terrible weather-related destruction in 2021. More than 8,000 fires broke out in California. The number and their intensity a marked increase on what's normally seen there. Justin Rollout witnessed the resulting devastation, but says that amidst the burned-out ruins, people are holding out hope of recovery and reconstruction.
Extract 2.
There is something primeval about giant sequoias. Their weird, broccoli-like branches wouldn't seem out of place with a Diplodocus plodding by. And they are impossibly big. 30 or 40 people would have to link hands to hug the largest ones. The tallest are 90 meters high. That's like a 30-story tower block. They make you feel deep time, sighs Christy Bingham, as she looks up at the biggest tree in the world, known as the General Sherman. You can just sense standing here that this tree was born before Jesus. Christy lowers her voice as she says this, as if out of respect. She's in charge of conserving these magnificent trees in the Sequoia National Park in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Sequoias live so long because they are exquisitely adapted to their environment, Christy tells me. There have always been fires in California, and in response, sequoias have developed insulating bark, which can be up to a meter thick and which stops all but the hottest fires damaging the trees.
Extract 3.
But California's fires are changing. Christy leads me deeper into the forest to show me what she means. This was a giant sequoia grove, she says. The landscape is monochrome now, grey or black, ash or cinders. Many of the huge trees have been reduced to columns of charcoal. Before 2015, no one saw a sequoia that looked like this, says Christy. You never saw a tree become a candle and burn up in this way before. She points to the blackened remains of one of the biggest trees. This 1,000 to 2,000-year-old tree should have lived another 500 to 800 years, but it's gone. It will not sequester any more carbon. It will not be a spotted owl house. It's dead. And in the forest, Christy hasn't given up hope either. She expects to see baby sequoias sprouting here next year. They like burnt soil. And she says the forests need to be better managed, with dead wood and brush that can fuel the fires cleared away.
Extract 4.
What's more, a few of the trees, even here amongst the worst destruction, will survive. Christy starts to scrape with her fingers at the charred bark of a giant sequoia at the very edge of the grove. Not far in, about an inch, and the charcoal gives way to reddish bark. This is just surface damage, she says. This tree will live. The resilience of the sequoias should inspire us, says Christy. It's telling us we need to act on climate change now. Every carbon reduction will help these forests persist. And I notice her smile has returned as we walk on through the trees.
Justin Rollout.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract 1.
Before COVID, there was climate change, the greatest challenge for humanity's future. Will this be the year when we finally start to turn round the juggernaut of growing carbon dioxide emissions? Will we see more of the extreme weather events which appeared around the world in 2021, harbingers of the dangers to come? It's these themes of hope and fear which we'll be keeping in mind during this special New Year's Day edition. We'll hear about the efforts people are making to rebuild their lives after a year in which they've suffered. We start with climate change and a place that saw terrible weather-related destruction in 2021. More than 8,000 fires broke out in California. The number and their intensity a marked increase on what's normally seen there. Justin Rollout witnessed the resulting devastation, but says that amidst the burned-out ruins, people are holding out hope of recovery and reconstruction.
Extract 2.
There is something primeval about giant sequoias. Their weird, broccoli-like branches wouldn't seem out of place with a Diplodocus plodding by. And they are impossibly big. 30 or 40 people would have to link hands to hug the largest ones. The tallest are 90 meters high. That's like a 30-story tower block. They make you feel deep time, sighs Christy Bingham, as she looks up at the biggest tree in the world, known as the General Sherman. You can just sense standing here that this tree was born before Jesus. Christy lowers her voice as she says this, as if out of respect. She's in charge of conserving these magnificent trees in the Sequoia National Park in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Sequoias live so long because they are exquisitely adapted to their environment, Christy tells me. There have always been fires in California, and in response, sequoias have developed insulating bark, which can be up to a meter thick and which stops all but the hottest fires damaging the trees.
Extract 3.
But California's fires are changing. Christy leads me deeper into the forest to show me what she means. This was a giant sequoia grove, she says. The landscape is monochrome now, grey or black, ash or cinders. Many of the huge trees have been reduced to columns of charcoal. Before 2015, no one saw a sequoia that looked like this, says Christy. You never saw a tree become a candle and burn up in this way before. She points to the blackened remains of one of the biggest trees. This 1,000 to 2,000-year-old tree should have lived another 500 to 800 years, but it's gone. It will not sequester any more carbon. It will not be a spotted owl house. It's dead. And in the forest, Christy hasn't given up hope either. She expects to see baby sequoias sprouting here next year. They like burnt soil. And she says the forests need to be better managed, with dead wood and brush that can fuel the fires cleared away.
Extract 4.
What's more, a few of the trees, even here amongst the worst destruction, will survive. Christy starts to scrape with her fingers at the charred bark of a giant sequoia at the very edge of the grove. Not far in, about an inch, and the charcoal gives way to reddish bark. This is just surface damage, she says. This tree will live. The resilience of the sequoias should inspire us, says Christy. It's telling us we need to act on climate change now. Every carbon reduction will help these forests persist. And I notice her smile has returned as we walk on through the trees.
Justin Rollout.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
I spent a recent evening with a friend. He had a range of food delivery apps on his phone, businesses like Deliveroo and Uber Eats, and never troubled himself with an in-person trudge around a supermarket. As he explained, he didn't think in advance about groceries because he didn't have to. In Rob's world, toothpaste, bananas, loo roll, ice, and biscuits were things he realized you wanted, ordered with a single touch on the phone, and expected to arrive within 10 minutes, and often sooner. In Britain, it's hard not to be aware of the rise of food delivery services. The idea of paying £20 for a burrito or a bowl of soup to be delivered to my door by a low-paid stranger seems both the height of laziness and indulgence. Is it so hard, especially in a city, to walk 5 minutes to the nearest takeaway and pick the stuff up yourself? Is it so hard, indeed, to buy raw ingredients and cook? Perhaps it is. Over the last 10 years, recipe and ingredient delivery services have taken off, enabling people to chop, assemble, and apply heat to foodstuffs without actually having to plan or cook whole meals. Supermarkets, meanwhile, have worked their ready-made dinner offerings up to a gourmet art. I've got an assortment of microwavable spicy chicken ramens in my fridge as we speak. But it's the rise of ultra-fast delivery of a more general stripe that's truly overhauling the very fundamentals of consumption. We are democratizing the right to laziness, says the UK general manager of Getir, the Turkish fast delivery startup. He has a point. After all, now almost anyone, from student to pensioner, as long as they're tech-savvy, can virtually snap their fingers and have their heart's desire brought to them. I decided to try out just what a world of democratized laziness might feel like and downloaded the German app Gorillas, Rob's favorite. After scrolling through a rudimentary but serviceable array of foods and things like pregnancy tests and cotton buds, I felt, did I really want to encourage a world in which even strolling to a corner shop is far too much effort? A world in which eventually there will be no shops or types of products, just the things that you want and that you want now? I shut the app down and set out for the shop. The desire for speed on the part of consumers will continue to increase. It's not a fad. The digital marketplace has stoked a mindset of permanent consumer impatience and the expectation of immediate gratification of every whim. This can't be healthy. A whole generation is about to come of age experiencing goods and services as simply things you can have delivered to your doorstep fast. Will their brains cease to distinguish between different types of desire or demand? Will awareness of the distinctness of different objects and services melt away? Will they lose the capacity to form plans and commit to them, plans as minor as what to cook later that night? During the pandemic, other people have posed a risk to our health, but goods haven't. At first, we buried ourselves in the comfort of having it all brought to us in the safety of our homes as headlines screamed out terrifying developments. But as the pandemic progressed, supply boomed, now fortified by on-demand entertainment, home offices, and the erasure of the need to go out to shop, the COVID-era domestic scene has engulfed all, turning homes from launch pads back into castles. Pre-pandemic, the outside world was where we went to work and play. Now, as the worst has passed, it's not so much a place of danger, but one of hassle. There may be nothing wrong with this, especially if your home really is a castle, and a comfortable, peaceful one at that. But as the pandemic made clear, for many, the home is anything but. And for those who live alone, especially the elderly, a trip to the local shop and a few friendly words may well be the only human interaction of the day. Post offices and local banks have already dwindled, and now the dominance of delivery apps is threatening an already diminishing stock of corner shops. It's not just the old who are missing out. Rob and his cohort are losing the chance to experience the vividness and textures of routine daily life, the human rhythms of a city, town, or street, and the sense of self that arises from going out and about. I suspect the 3-minute walk had also become simply too much effort, and the promise of social interaction unimportant. Humans are always caught between the desire to be lazy and the desire to expend effort and reap its rewards. I wonder if there can be too much ease, whether, in the rush to enjoy the right to laziness, we lose the far more fundamental pleasures of effort, delayed gratification, and fresh air.
Dispone ahora de 1 minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
I spent a recent evening with a friend. He had a range of food delivery apps on his phone, businesses like Deliveroo and Uber Eats, and never troubled himself with an in-person trudge round a supermarket. As he explained, he didn't think in advance about groceries because he didn't have to. In Rob's world, toothpaste, bananas, loo roll, ice, and biscuits were things you realized you wanted, ordered with a single touch on the phone, and expected to arrive within 10 minutes, and often sooner. In Britain, it's hard not to be aware of the rise of food delivery services. The idea of paying £20 for a burrito or a bowl of soup to be delivered to my door by a low-paid stranger seems both the height of laziness and indulgence. Is it so hard, especially in a city, to walk 5 minutes to the nearest takeaway and pick the stuff up yourself? Is it so hard, indeed, to buy raw ingredients and cook? Perhaps it is. Over the last 10 years, recipe and ingredient delivery services have taken off, enabling people to chop, assemble, and apply heat to foodstuffs without actually having to plan or cook whole meals. Supermarkets, meanwhile, have worked their ready-made dinner offerings up to a gourmet art. I've got an assortment of microwavable spicy chicken ramens in my fridge as we speak, But it's the rise of ultra-fast delivery of a more general stripe that's truly overhauling the very fundamentals of consumption. We are democratizing the right to laziness, says the UK general manager of Getir, the Turkish fast delivery startup. He has a point. After all, now almost anyone, from student to pensioner, as long as they're tech savvy, can virtually snap their fingers and have their heart's desire brought to them. I decided to try out just what a world of democratized laziness might feel like and downloaded the German app Gorillas, Rob's favorite. After scrolling through a rudimentary but serviceable array of foods and things like pregnancy tests and cotton buds, I felt, did I really want to encourage a world in which even strolling to a corner shop is far too much effort? A world in which eventually there will be no shops or types of products, just the things that you want and that you want now? I shut the app down and set out for the shop. The desire for speed on the part of consumers will continue to increase. It's not a fad. The digital marketplace has stoked a mindset of permanent consumer impatience and the expectation of immediate gratification of every whim. This can't be healthy. A whole generation is about to come of age experiencing goods and services as simply things you can have delivered to your doorstep fast. Will their brains cease to distinguish between different types of desire or demand? Will awareness of the distinctness of different objects and services melt away? Will they lose the capacity to form plans and commit to them, plans as minor as what to cook later that night? During the pandemic, other people have posed a risk to our health, but goods haven't. At first, we buried ourselves in the comfort of having it all brought to us in the safety of our homes as headlines screamed out terrifying developments. But as the pandemic progressed, supply boomed, now fortified by on-demand entertainment, home offices, and the erasure of the need to go out to shop, the COVID-era domestic scene has engulfed all, turning homes from launch pads back into castles. Pre-pandemic, the outside world was where we went to work and play. Now, as the worst has passed, it's not so much a place of danger, but one of hassle. There may be nothing wrong with this, especially if your home really is a castle, and a comfortable, peaceful one at that. But as the pandemic made clear, for many, the home is anything but. And for those who live alone, especially the elderly, a trip to the local shop and a few friendly words may well be the only human interaction of the day. Post offices and local banks have already dwindled, and now the dominance of delivery apps is threatening an already diminishing stock of corner shops. It's not just the old who are missing out. Rob and his cohort are losing the chance to experience the vividness and textures of routine daily life, the human rhythms of a city, town, or street, and the sense of self that arises from going out and about. I suspect the 3-minute walk had also become simply too much effort, and the promise of social interaction unimportant. Humans are always caught between the desire to be lazy and the desire to expend effort and reap its rewards. I wonder if there can be too much ease, whether, in the rush to enjoy the right to laziness, we lose the far more fundamental pleasures of effort, delayed gratification, and fresh air.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, Siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.